take it back. It's hard. Believe me, I know it's hard. I'm not going to bullshit you and tell you it gets easier with time, because it don't. Dropping his arm around my shoulders, he continued, but you have to make peace with it, for yourself, not for anyone else. You have to know that what you were doing, why you pulled the trigger, you were doing for us, for your daughter over there. You had no way of knowing in that moment who those people were. I nodded and wiped at my nose. It hurt like hell, and I winced. I know. I get it. Sarge stepped in front of me, stopping me. No, you don't, but you need to. You're not a hard man, Morgan, and I don't mean that with any disrespect, but you're not. Some people are... I interrupted him. Like you? Sarge's head dropped. Then he looked back up at me. Son, I've done some horrible things in my day, but I always did them because it was what I thought was right. It was what my government told me to do, and mainly always because it was what I needed to do for the men I was with. He paused and ran his hands through his hair. You don't think I have regrets? You don't think I wake up at night in a cold sweat? But when bullets are flying and people are dying, there's the now. And you did no less. His words were sinking in. While the old man always had a way with words, they weren't always like this. He was good at being an ass, at making a scene. But he wasn't as gifted at trying to express himself in a real and meaningful way. Sure, he knew how to motivate people, for better or worse. This was just a side of the old codger I wasn't used to seeing. I understand, I said, and stopped. Sarge stopped and looked at me. I don't think you do. Not yet, anyway. But I hope it comes to you, Morgan. You need to know that what you did for us. He pointed at our group sitting by the pool. Looking back at me, he said, you did it for all of us. It finally sank in. Combat, a world I was not really accustomed to, was not black and white. It was 1,000 shades of gray. Shit happens. Bad shit happens. Sometimes good people die. Sometimes the wrong people die. But today, my people didn't die. And right now, at this moment, that's all that mattered. The sun was now above the horizon. Small arms still crackled, not far off. For what seemed like the first time, I looked around. The scene was terrible. Bodies and pieces of bodies were everywhere. To make it worse, some of them were moving. Shading my eyes with my hand, I took it in. It was dawn, a new day. It was supposed to be a new opportunity, a clean start. Yet what I saw was far from it. Not far from where Sarge and I stood was a man in a pair of shorts and a dirty t-shirt. His underwear was dirty as well. And from where I stood, it looked as though he'd soiled himself. But then I couldn't blame him. Had I been shot in my lower back as he was, the least I would do would be to soil myself. He was pulling himself with his arms, trying to get away from the camp. I looked at him as he crawled. In a moment of exhaustion, he dropped his head to the ground. He was looking at me, and I could see the small buffs of dust his breath created on the ground. Reaching up, I patted Sarge on the shoulder. I kind of understood now. More would come later. I walked past him towards the prostrate man. While he didn't lift his head, I could see him looking at me. The look on his face was almost relief. As I stepped up to him, he let out a hard breath, blowing dust and dry grass out before him. I stood over the man. He said nothing, simply closing his eyes. Drawing my pistol, I took a deep breath. I, too, felt the relief wash over me. Lowering the muzzle of the XD, I pulled the trigger. Looking up towards the pool, I could see everyone looking at me. My family, nearly all the people in this world I now cared about, were looking at me. The man on the ground was no longer suffering. I looked around and saw others. Some had fear in their faces. Some, while still alive, were too far gone to care either way. I walked a few paces to a woman lying face up. The sun shone brightly on her cheek. Her eyes were closed, and she gasped for breath. Raising the pistol again, I squeezed the trigger. When I looked up again, my family was no longer by the pool. They'd fanned out and were moving across the field. The occasional pop of a pistol or rifle told me what they were doing. We'd started this, and we would end this. The thoughts of no quarter were gone from my mind. Now, all I could think about was ending the suffering for these poor souls as fast as I could. Hate is a powerful thing. That is, until you come face to face with it. But I guess there are different kinds of hate. I surely didn't feel any remorse for Billy. He deserved exactly what he got. Actually, if I could have, I would have taken more time with him. He got off easy. We stopped at Billy's body. Sarge looked down at him. Damn, Morgan. Shit happens. We caught these assholes completely by surprise, Sarge said, and pointed at the body. Look at him. He's in his drawers and no shoes. The other one's over there. I jerked my head back towards the body of the young girl. They didn't have any shoes either. Surprise, speed, and violence of action. I looked around at the bodies scattered across the grassy fields surrounding the camp. I saw Eric walking up behind a man trying to crawl away. He casually walked up to the man. Hearing the footfalls, he rolled over on his back and held his hands up. Eric looked down at him and raised his pistol, firing point blank into the man's face. I think we achieved it, I said. Sarge grunted. Looks like everyone's getting it out of their system. Looking around, I saw Thad. He was still by the pool with Leanne. I was happy to see her still there and not out participating in what was happening. The words, no quarter, came to mind. I remember saying them. And at the time, this was the very sort of thing I was thinking about. Leaving none of these people alive. But the actual act of doing so was quite different. There's the romance and the reality never lives up to the romance. Thad was looking at the ground. As I got closer, he looked up at me. I smiled and asked if he was all right. Without looking around, he said, I can't do that, Morgan. I grabbed his shoulder. I don't blame you, buddy. He pointed towards a group of the cabins sitting under a hammock of beautiful oaks. We need to go through all these buildings. Nodding, I replied, yeah. You want to go check them out? Thad stood up and stretched. That I can do. Come on, then. Let's get it over with. Leanne was sitting on a lounge chair. She looked up and asked, you want me to go? Yeah, come on. You can be backup, I said with a smile. It was a hard thing, really. Taking your teenage daughter with you to clear buildings. But this was the new reality. This is the way it is now. It was a sobering thought that brought Little Bit to mind. She'd have to grow up fast. There wouldn't be years of video games and riding bikes with friends. Hell, there were few friends now. Jace and Edie would be it for her for some time. Thankfully, though, she at least did have them, and they had her. We went to the first cabin. The door was open. Stopping shy of it, I told Leanne to stay outside and keep her eyes open. Thad and I would handle whatever happened inside. She needed to be our eyes for what was happening outside. I started for the door, and Thad pulled me back. I'll go first. You got them girls to worry about. Ain't no one worrying about me. I smiled and looked him in the eye. If you want to go first, you can. But don't think no one is worrying about you, brother. I am. Pointing at Leanne, I said, they are, and so is everyone else. Then I smiled and added, so is Mary. That broad smile spread across his face, and he said, Morgan, you a mess. Then he got serious. Follow me. The first three cabins were empty. The fourth wasn't. I went through the door first this time, making Thad alternate the task with me. The cabins were about 20 feet by 20 feet. They were nice little cabins. The Elks had done a fine job on them. Inside were several sets of bunk beds, a small table, and a bathroom. Each cabin would hold 12 people. Throwing the door open, I stepped in, sweeping the Mossberg to the right, while Thad came in behind me and went to the left. The cabin was empty, and I moved to the bathroom. Snatching the door open, a woman screamed, and there was a sharp crack. I ducked to my right and dropped to my knees as drywall dust fell down on me. The woman was right in front of me and still screaming. I reached out and grabbed the barrel of the .22 revolver she clutched in her right hand and twisted it, yanking it from her grip. There were two small kids in the bathtub. They, too, were screaming and crying. Thad was standing over me, staring down the barrel of his AK. Without looking down at me, he asked, "You all right?" The woman was still screaming, and I started to get to my feet. Needless to say, I was a little irritated. I screamed back at her, "Shut up! No one's going to hurt you!" She reached out for the children, who immediately fell into her arms. "Please don't kill me! Please don't kill my babies!" I stepped out of the doorway, and Thad leaned in. "Come on, ma'am. Ain't no one gonna hurt you. You need to calm down. You're scaring them young'uns." Thad's calm voice had an effect on her. Still sniveling, she looked up, her face wet with tears. But Thad was patient and motioned with his hand. She slowly got to her feet, clutching the crying children close to her. She shrank from his hand as though his mere touch would somehow infect her. Sensing the woman's feelings, Thad stepped back, making way for her to get through the door. She came out nervously. I stepped out the cabin door and nodded for Leanne. "Go in there and try to get her to come out." She stepped around me and looked at the woman. Kneeling down to be on the level of the children, she smiled. "Come on, let's walk over to the pool." The woman looked at Thad, then at me. Looking back at Leanne, she nodded and headed for the door. I stepped further away from the door, giving them room. As she came out, Leanne looked over at me. I gave her a slight nod and motioned with my chin in the direction of the pool. She nodded and guided them towards it. Thad came out. He was watching them as they walked away. After a moment, he asked, "What do we do with them?" "I don't know what we do with them. I'm sure we've killed whoever they depended on. Maybe we should just take them to town." I let out a long breath and shook my head slightly. "And have someone inside our wire that hates us?" I pointed at the little boy. "So he can grow up hating us, all the while plotting ways to kill us?" Thad looked at me. "But what do we do with them?" "I don't know. Right now, we have to finish this. That will come later." Thad and I continued to search the cabins. We found bodies, several bodies. The damage the Apaches caused was stunning. We passed one cabin that had taken a direct hit from one of the many Hellfire rockets. It was gone. There was a part of a slab and some pipe sticking out of the ground, and that was it. Several cabins around it were severely damaged. The ones to either side were open shells. The sides closest to the blast were gone. An entire side of the cabin just gone. As we found wounded men, I shot them. Everyone. The words "no quarter" ringing in my ears with every report of my carbine, pistol or shotgun. It was never a question when we found them. I never asked Thad to partake. He was there with me, covering me, looking out for me. But I delivered the coup de grace. We piled weapons as we found them, just to make it easier to come back for them. We found other women and kids, some together, some alone. Each time, we would direct them towards the pool. Leanne returned and helped collect weapons. She said some of the guardsmen were there now, bringing other women and kids to the pool as well. As we found lone children, she would take the small crying kids by the hand and lead them to the pool. I was relieved to know there was someone there keeping an eye on them, There were weapons lying everywhere. It wouldn't be hard for some woman or maybe a teenage kid to pick up a weapon and extract some quick revenge. Doc was there as well, treating the many wounded. We found a number of kids and adults with wounds. Thad and I finished searching the two groups of cabins and walked back towards the center of the camp. There was still gunfire being exchanged at the large building in the center of the camp. It was sporadic, but would flare up in intense exchanges from time to time. We found Sarge and Livingston together, coordinating the assault on the building. "We cleared the cabins," I said, as we walked up. Sarge spun around. "Find anything?"
"Some women and kids," Thad replied.
Sarge wiped grit and soot from his face. Spitting in the dust, he asked, "Any combatants?" I looked down at my feet.
"None that are alive now."
As we stood there, I dropped the mag from my carbine and looked at it. There were rounds in it, but it felt light, so I replaced it with a fresh one. I gave it a tap and a tug to make sure it was in, and tucked the other one into the dump pouch on my belt. Thad pointed at the large gymnasium.
"What's going on here?"
Livingston took his helmet off and ran his hands through his hair. "The last bunch of them is holed up in there. We're trying to root them out." Sarge chuckled.
"I keep telling them to burn the bastards out. You set that place on fire, and they'll come out. They'll come out real quick."
"We're trying not to destroy this place," Livingston sighed. Holding his arms out, Sarge spun around.
"Have you looked around this fucking place?"
I looked around. Smoke was rising from several places. The air was heavy with it. The early hour and the fact that humidity drops lower to the ground as the sun comes up was holding the smoke low to the ground. The acrid odor of plastic, wood, fuel, and the general smell of structural fires filled the air. Then there was the disturbing, sickly sweet smell of cooking meat. The Polynesians called humans long pig. And it was that thought, more of a mental image of the smell of cooking pork, that came to mind. As I pondered that, Ted and Mike walked up. Ted looked at Sarge.
"Why aren't we burning these fuckers yet?"
Sarge jabbed his thumb at Livingston.
"Ask him."
Ted looked at Livingston and took a thermite grenade from his vest. Flipping it in his hand, he asked,
"How many men have you lost in these ridiculous assaults?"
Livingston shook his head. "We've had 4 wounded, 6 KIA.
"One or two of these, and this shit is over," Ted said.
Sarge looked at Livingston.
"Why don't you just let us do what we do?"
Livingston fiddled with the suspension rig of his helmet. After settling it onto his head, he looked at Sarge and sniffed loudly.
"Fuck it. Do whatever you want."
He abruptly spun on his heels and walked away. Ted looked at Sarge, and Sarge nodded. Turning to Mike, Ted tossed him one of the thermite grenades. Mike smiled.
"Let's burn this shit to the ground."
Sarge looked at me and Thad.
"You two go with them and lay down covering fire. Let's get this barbecue kicked off."
Mike clapped his hands and rubbed them together. Smiling like a devil, he said,
"Give me a minute. Let me get a couple of things."
Sarge shook his head.
"Well, hurry the hell up."
Looking at me, Mike said,
"Come, Morgan, give me a hand."
Looking at Ted, he said, "Find me some duct tape." I followed him as he ran back towards where the trucks were parked. He ran up to one of the DHS vehicles and unlatched a fuel can from a rack mounted on its side. I was looking at the truck that burned and a large patch of blackened, scorched ground. Pointing at it, I asked, "What was that?" Mike stuck his head around the side of the truck.
"Oh, that was a fuel bladder. When I hit that truck, it ruptured and burned.
Shame. We could have used the fuel." Pointing at the building, Mike said,
"Run over there and grab that ladder."
I grabbed the extension ladder he was pointing at and hefted it up onto my shoulder. With these items in hand,
we headed back towards the gym. Getting back to Sergeant Ted, Mike asked, "You ready?" Ted nodded, "Yeah. Let's roast these fuckers." We made our way around to the back of the building. Ted put up a hand and we stopped. Just down the wall was a metal door hanging only from the bottom hinge. The door was riddled with holes and gashes from countless rounds. There were entrance and exit holes on either side. Mike motioned for me to put the ladder down. Ted was watching the door and Thad was watching the way we'd come from. I pulled the rope and raised the ladder up to reach the roof, expecting with every bang of the dogs in the rungs to start taking fire. While I did that, Mike took the tape from Ted and taped the thermite grenade to the side of the fuel can, carefully wrapping it so as not to interfere with the grenade's spoon. Mike pushed his carbine around to his back and mounted the ladder and started to climb. It bounced and banged against the roof as he did. I gripped both sides and placed a boot against both rubber feet of the ladder. It didn't take him long to get to the roof. He quickly disappeared from view, and my heart pounded. We had no idea what was happening up there. Not that it was likely anyone else was up there with Mike. After a moment, he reappeared and hurriedly mounted the ladder. He came sliding down it like a fireman with one foot on either side. When he was about halfway down, I heard a pop followed by a loud hiss from inside the building. When Mike's feet hit the ground, another sound came from the building, along with a bright orange flash. The sound was like a large sail being unfurled. Thick black smoke immediately began to billow from the open door. We backed away from it, keeping our eyes and weapons on it as we did so. It wasn't long before we heard gunfire around the front of the building. I guess they were making a run for the front door, but we waited. Our time would surely come. And I was right. It didn't take long for two men to come crawling out of the suffocating smoke. We immediately shot them down. There was more shooting out front, and the flames grew too intense for us to remain behind the gym. Thad backed away, holding a hand in front of his face. "Damn, that's hot!" Mike stood there with his hands tucked into his vest. "Imagine being in there." A figure suddenly burst through the screen of smoke. His left side was on fire, and he flailed about in agony, screaming. Mike quickly raised his carbine, but Ted reached out and pushed it back down. "Fuck 'em. Let 'em burn," Ted said. It reminded me of the World War II movies I've watched where Japanese or German soldiers would come out of a bunker on fire, and some battle-weary soldier would say the same thing. His screams cut through me, though, to my soul. No matter how much I hated someone, I couldn't let this happen. I stepped forward and quickly shot the man. He fell to the ground and continued to cook. When I turned to leave, Thad made eye contact with me and gave me a nod. I knew he'd done some horrible things, but to me, it was a different situation. If I'd come home and found these men killing my family, I would feel differently. But that wasn't the case here. We made our way back around the front of the building. The smoke was growing thicker as the oak floor of the gym continued to burn, and the fire spread throughout the building. Smoke now poured in thick, choking clouds from every opening. No one was coming out now. Anyone still inside would forever remain there. Out front, we found Sarge and Sheffield. They were organizing parties to police the camp for weapons, food, and anything of use. Sheffield was telling his people what to do with what they collected when I stepped in front of him. "We also need to take the boots off anyone we find wearing them. Collect any boots you find," I said. Sheffield looked at me like my head was screwed on backwards. "You want to take boots off dead men?" I shrugged. "You got a big pile of boots someplace? We're going to need them at some point." One of the guardsmen stepped out of the group and lifted his right foot. Reaching down, he pulled the sole away from it, exposing his sock. "I need boots." Sheffield looked at him, then at me. "I see your point. Clothes, too. Anything that can be used, we need to take. Anything.
All right, people. You know what you're doing. Get to it, Sarge shouted.
The group broke up and started going through the camp. Sarge pointed to a small house sitting across the road from the gym. It was heavily damaged by a missile strike from one of the Apaches.
Anyone clear that place yet?
Livingston looked at it. No, there couldn't be anyone alive in that. Look at it. Sarge jerked his head.
Come on, let's go check it.
We walked towards the house as light columns of smoke rose from several places amongst the wreckage. The back half of the house suffered most of the damage. It was surreal to open the front door that still stood, only to see all the way out to the field behind it. All we found was a pair of feet sticking out from under a jumble of roof trusses, drywall, and furniture. But there was one part of the house we couldn't get to. The hallway going to it was destroyed. Sarge told Mike to go out and find a window into that part and check it. Mike and Thad walked around the side of the house. We could hear them shuffling around inside, and after a moment, Mike called out,
Hey, come around here and check this out.
Going around the house, I looked through a blasted-out window. Mike was kneeling beside a bed with a load of debris on it. A man was pinned in the bed. Sarge looked in and laughed.
Ha ha ha! I told you, if I ever saw you again, I'd kill your ass.
He then climbed through the window. Charles Tabor was pinned in the bed and couldn't move. He followed Sarge's movements as he made his way into the cramped space. The weight sitting on him was obvious, so much that he couldn't speak. His eyes darted between us, and from them, I had a pretty good idea of what he was thinking. Sarge sat down beside the bed and relaxed. He looked over at Tabor.
You should have just stayed the hell away when you had the chance. But no, you had to come back. Thought you were going to get us, didn't you? How'd that work out for you?
Tabor's eyes were fierce. He tried a couple of times to say something, but the weight pinning him to the bed prevented him from speaking. He was doing good to get enough breath to remain living. Mike pushed on a truss, and Tabor emitted a slight sound.
With a smile, Mike said, I say we leave him here to rot.
Sarge looked into Tabor's eyes.
Nah, I let this piece of shit get away from me once. I'm not going to make that same mistake again. This is where it ends for you, sport. Your time here is over. I hope you rot in hell.
Sarge reached up and cupped his hand over Tabor's mouth, pinching his nose with the thumb of the same hand. Tabor jerked his head, trying to breathe. Sarge reached up with his free hand and grabbed a handful of hair, holding his head steady. I watched as he struggled to breathe, but it was futile. In a little more than a minute, the struggle was over, and Tabor was motionless. Sarge waited a little longer before pulling his hand away. He placed a finger on Tabor's neck, standing up. He said,
This fucker is gone. Finally.
Lastly, he spit on the man's face before turning towards the window.
Let's get the hell out of here.
I'd taken the life of many men today, delivering the fatal shot that ended their existence on this earth. But this was by far the most disturbing thing I'd seen. This was personal. Sarge used his own hand to smother the life from this man. Not that I blamed him. I hated the man as well. But I don't think I could do what I just witnessed. At least, not like it happened. Sure, in the middle of a fight, like with Billy. But that's different. That's in the moment. The old man did this out of pure spite, pure hate. But I don't blame him one bit for it. I was glad he was on my side. The rest of the day was spent cleaning out the camp. We took everything from clothes and bedding to food, ammo, and weapons. We took it all. Every body I saw was barefooted. We didn't take the clothes from their backs, but we damn sure took the boots if they had them. It was something I'd started thinking about when lying in my position the night of attack. I had another couple pair, but there was no way to get more. Little Bit was going to need shoes soon. Not that this would help her, but it would help others. Weapons and ammo were loaded onto one truck and food on another. Everything else was loaded onto a third. We ended up with 27 women and kids. They too were loaded onto a truck and taken back to town. I didn't know what was going to happen to them, where they'd go. But that wasn't my problem. Thankfully, it was Sheffield's. Around 3 in the afternoon, our group gathered back up. Doc was checking Danny's shoulder, and the girls were in a knot, chattering away and laughing. It was striking to see them giggling, considering what they'd just done. But I guess it was good they were dealing with it as they were. It was yet another example of how things have changed. Not 10 feet from where they were standing and laughing was a dead man. He'd been nearly cut in half and lay on his back, face skyward and mouth frozen in an eternal scream he would never utter. But they paid him no notice. Maybe that was a way of dealing with it. I'm sure there would be some issues to come up later. I hoped they would be all right. And even more, I hoped they would be a little disturbed. Not to be disturbed as a result of this sort of thing would be far more concerning to me. An MRAP pulled up and the driver leaned on the horn. We all looked up at it. The driver's door opened and there was Mike grinning like a water-headed fool. Look what I got. Sarge looked the truck over. This thing looks nearly new. Mike jumped out. Yeah, I picked the best-looking one of the bunch. Sarge smiled and looked back at me. Looks like we got us a new ride, Sheriff. How the hell are we going to feed that thing? What's it get, 4 gallons a mile? I asked. Sarge laughed. It ain't that bad. But it's close, Ted added. Sarge looked around the camp. Things were obviously wrapping up. The guards' trucks were all lined up on the main road in the camp, and their people were loitering around them, waiting on the next order. The truck with the civilians was gone, having already been sent back to town. Sarge walked over to Sheffield, and the two talked for a minute. They shook hands, and Sarge returned. All right, folks, let's make like an asshole and get the shit out of here. Mount up. The girls were already gathered around the truck looking at it. They started to cackle and quickly moved to the back of the truck. Perez suddenly appeared, carrying a sack over his shoulder. He casually opened the rear door and swept his arm with a flourish and a slight bow. Ladies? Shaking my head, I asked, where the hell have you been? Out helping police up the camp, he said, with a grin as he tossed the sack into the truck. Ted laughed. You mean looting, you old bastard? Perez shook a cigarette from a pack in his hand and shrugged. One man's looting is another man's policing. It's going to be crowded, but everyone get in. We'll drive this back to the other vehicles. Let's go, Sarge barked. After everyone else was in the truck, I stepped up, and just before ducking in, I took another look around the camp. It was a far cry from what it must have looked like in its prime, when the Elks were bringing kids in by the thousands. The laughing and incredible memories that were created here were a distant memory from the destruction I now saw. Smoke rose from many places around the property as several fires still burned, and bodies were everywhere. Looking up at a lone, tall, longleaf pine, I spotted a buzzard. He would certainly eat well tonight, and in the days to come. Sitting in the back of the truck as it rolled out of the camp, Perez looked at me. Touching his face under his nose with a finger, he said, You've got a little something right here. I gave him the finger, and he laughed. Perez smiled, leaned back, and closed his eyes. Mike drove us back to where we started this morning. The truck was loud and slow. It rumbled along the road, bouncing us around. I looked at Danny. How you feeling? He glanced at the shoulder. I'm all right. Doc thinks it's just a fragment. I leaned back against the side of the truck. Thank God that's over. Danny grunted. Yeah, no shit. I looked over at Leanne. She was sitting with Jess and the two were laughing. It was strange to see their carefree state. But then, everything went so well. For us, at least. Considering what we'd just accomplished, it went well for the guard as well. They lost a total of 9 men, with an even dozen wounded. But 9 people lost their lives today. 9 of ours. I don't know if anyone did a formal body count on the DHS personnel. Leanne saw me looking at her and smiled. She waved a silly wave as if this was just a family trip and someone had pulled out a camera. I smiled, winked, and waved back. Getting back to the vehicles, Thad and Ted volunteered to drive the buggies back home. I got in the Suburban and pulled out behind them. It was actually nice to be alone. No one to think about or put on false fronts for. I wasn't feeling well. I knew what we'd done needed doing, but I was feeling sick. I'd seen so many people die, some in horrible ways, some begging and pleading for their lives. And unlike the movies, it was a messy thing. The Apaches tore bodies to pieces, and small arms caused horrific wounds. I was so over it all now. I just wanted it to go away. Spiraling down this well of despair, I started trying to think of ways to forget about it all. Something that would take all our minds off what just happened. Because, aside from Sarge and the guys who may be accustomed to this sort of thing, the rest of us were not. Every one of us would have to deal with the events of today in one fashion or another. But as this played out in my mind, I came up with an idea. Something that I thought would surely take everyone's mind off all of this, and maybe, if even for a little while, put a smile on everyone's face. Pulling up to the house, Mel and Little Bit were out on the porch before I shut the truck down. Mike stopped the MRAP out on the road in front of the house where Danny and Leanne got out. When I got out, I saw the surprise on Mel's face. She was obviously shocked and scared. Little Bit looked at me, then up at Mel. She started to tear up when she looked at Mel, sensing her fear. I smiled, trying to alleviate her fears. She ran off the porch towards me, and I scooped her up. Holding her in my arms, she looked at me. "What happened to your face?" she asked in a timid, scared voice. Touching my nose, I replied, "Oh, just part of the job, baby. I'm okay, though." She ran her fingers across my cheek under my eye. "You've got black eyes." Mel was there and looking me over. I smiled at her. "I'm okay." Looking over my shoulder at Leanne walking up the drive, I added, "She's okay, too. We're both okay." Mel wrapped her arms around me. "You were gone so long, I was so worried." "Mommy was afraid. She kept checking the time," Little Bit added. I grunted. "It was a long day." Leanne walked up and Mel released me and grabbed her, wrapping her up in her arms. Leanne hugged her mother, and the two remained that way for some time. Leanne broke the moment by saying, "I'm fine, Mom. No one got hurt." From the porch, I heard another voice. "You're back!" We all looked up to see Taylor standing on the porch. She was gently making her way down the stairs. I walked over and hugged her as well. "I was so worried about you," she said. "It's all over now, kiddo," I replied. "Is it really over now? Are they all gone?" Mel asked. I looked back at her and thought about her words. Gone, such a permanent choice. But I guess it was the correct one. Smiling, I replied, "Yes, baby. They're gone. All gone." "Mom, I'm hungry. Is there anything to eat?" Leanne asked. Little Bit jumped up and down. "Yes, come in. We've got stew and bread for you. Miss Kay and Mom made it." We went inside, and the girls all took a seat around the table. Mel asked Taylor to get the pot and put it on the table. She took me by the hand and led me to the bedroom. Closing the door, she looked at me. "We need to get you cleaned up." I took my gear off, dropping it all on the floor. Mel took out clean clothes and put them on the counter in the bathroom. As I sat on the bed, untying my boots, I heard the shower come on. Taking off my clothes, I went into the bathroom and stepped into the shower. Mel stayed with me, washing my back and hair. It was nice. Leaning against the side of the shower as she scrubbed my back, she ran her fingers through my hair. Thad's lye soap was a little harsh on the hair, but it was better than nothing. After I was dressed and slid my feet into some moccasin slippers, Mel asked me, "Is it really over?" I thought about the question. I smiled, thinking back to a political scandal many years ago. "Depends on your definition of it." "This is over. This part is definitely over." I took her hand and led her to the bed where we sat down. Taking her other hand, I said, "But it'll never be over. And honestly, I don't want it to. When it's over, I, you, will be gone. So I want it to last a long, long time. But for now, this is over." She laid her head on my shoulder. "I just want some quiet time. I just want you and the girls and quiet." Kissing the top of her head, I said, "Me too, babe. Me too." Standing up, I pulled her up. "Come on, let's go eat. I'm starving." She smiled and led me out to the dining room where the girls' voices could be heard talking and laughing. When we came through the door, they all smiled. I sat down in the middle of them as Taylor spooned out stew into bowls and passed them around. I was grateful no questions were asked about the day's events. Instead, we talked about anything else. I ate until I was positively stuffed, but I wasn't done. I pulled the pot over and looked into it. There was a little stew still in the bottom. So I tore a chunk of bread from the small loaf on the table and used it to sop up the stew. The girls laughed at me as I hovered over the pot. "Geez, Dad, how can you eat anymore?" Taylor asked. Smacking my lips, I said, "Waste not, want not." "Just lick it, baby," Mel said, and got the girls to laughing. I looked down into the pot. "I can't. My head won't fit in there." This caused them to laugh even harder. Leaning back in my chair, I patted my stomach. "I am stuffed. I'm going to lay on the couch like broccoli." Little Bit jumped out of her chair. "Can we watch a movie? I want everyone to watch a movie together." Mel took her hand. "Sweetie, Daddy's tired. Maybe tomorrow." She was dejected, and a pout spread across her face. I smiled and looked at Mel. "Actually, I would love to watch a movie." Mel looked at her. "What do you want to watch?" Little Bit smiled and bounced up and down. "Goonies! Let's watch the Goonies!" "Oh yeah, that's so cool. I haven't seen that in a long time," Taylor said. Leanne stood up. "I'm going to take a shower and put on my pajamas and get comfy." She took off, scooting her feet across the floor. Little Bit ran to the living room and got the movie and laptop out, setting it up on the coffee table. Mel told me to go sit down and ask Taylor to help her with the dinner dishes. I went and fell into the sofa, putting my feet up on the table and spreading my arms out. I was tired. We waited for Leanne to start the movie. Once everyone was there, Mel brought me another glass of tea, and we started the movie. I couldn't have been happier, sprawled out on the sofa like I was, with Mel on one side and Little Bit on the other. Leanne was sitting on the floor with her head against my leg, and Taylor was curled up on the love seat. I looked over at her. All I could see was her head poking out of the blanket she'd wrapped up in. She wrinkled her nose and smiled a childish smile. A smile spread across my face, and I reached out with my foot and wagged it at her. She pushed it away and wiggled deeper into her blanket. Looking around again, I felt so good. Gone were the thoughts from earlier. Maybe this was what would keep those thoughts away. Maybe keeping this close to me would keep those demons away. Like the guardians at the gates to my soul. I ran my hands through Mel's and Little Bit's hair. My guardians. Chapter 10. I woke up and looked around. I was confused, and it took me a minute to figure out where I was. Pushing the blanket off, I stood up and stretched. Mel must have covered me and left me on the sofa last night. Shuffling into the kitchen, I poured myself a glass of tea and looked out the window over the sink. It was a bright, clear morning and looked as though it were going to be a good day. A perfect day to get what I had in mind started. Going into the bedroom, I sat on the edge of the bed. Mel opened her eyes and smiled. "How'd you sleep?" she asked. "Good. I need to go to town this morning. You want to go?" She stretched. "Yeah. Can the girls come?" "Of course." She sat up. "Okay, let me get dressed." I slapped her ass. "Hurry up, woman. I'll go wake up the girls." I went and woke the girls. They were all excited about the prospect of a trip to town, especially Little Bit and Taylor. Taylor had been cooped up for some time now and was more than ready to get out. She bounded out of bed, having to catch herself, and she quickly started getting ready. As I walked out of her room, I said, "Tell Mom I'm going over to Danny's for a minute." She was pulling clothes from her dresser and inspecting them. Those that didn't pass muster were tossed aside. "Okay," she replied. I left the house and found the dogs in their usual place, sprawled out across the porch. I stepped over them and headed for Danny's house. Passing through the fence, an incredible aroma met me, and my mouth instantly started to water. Danny was sitting on the porch with his arm in a sling. Little Jace was in a rocker beside him, eating a fat biscuit. "How's the shoulder?" I asked, as I stepped up on the porch. He looked down at it. "Doc wants me to go to town so the clinic can get whatever is in there out. I'm about to head that way with Mel and the girls. You want to go?" "Nah, you guys go ahead. I'll wait for Doc." "But go in there and get you a biscuit. Miss Kay made some magic this morning." I laughed. "It sure as hell smells like it." "You think it smells good? Wait till you taste it." Danny looked at Jace. "Pretty good, aren't they?" The little boy held the biscuit in front of his face as he chewed. "Mm-hmm," was all he muttered. I laughed. "Well, let me get in there and get some for us." Inside, Bobby, Mary, and Kay were building more biscuits. Bobby was cutting them open, and Mary buttered them. Kay finished them by laying a fat round of sausage on and closing them up. The ladies looked up when I came in, and all three gasped. Little Edie was sitting at the table, eating her own biscuit.
"Morgan, dear, what happened to you?"
Kay shouted, as she wiped her hands on a dish towel. Smiling, I said,
"Just the nature of the business."
I started to make the old joke about, "You should see the other guy," but decided better of it.
"Are you okay?" Mary asked.
I waved her off.
"Yeah, I'm fine."
Smiling, I moved to lighten the mood.
"What's for breakfast?"
"Something smells so good."
"We made some sausage biscuits this morning," Bobby said.
"Buttermilk biscuits,"
Kay added cheerfully.
"Sounds good to me. We're headed to town this morning. Can I get 5 to go?"
Kay smiled brightly.
"Of course you can. Let me get you something to put them in."
She grabbed a plastic grocery sack and placed the 5 sandwiches inside and handed it to me.
"What are you going to town for?" Mary asked.
I shrugged.
"Just need to check on a couple of things."
I had a plan, but didn't want to share it just yet.
"Will you be home in time for supper?" Kay said, as I headed for the door.
I waved over my shoulder.
"We will."
Danny was cleaning Jace's face when I went outside. I smiled at him. Danny surely would make a good dad.
"I'll see you guys later."
Danny nodded.
"Yeah,
We'll be in town later.
As I walked off the porch, Thad, Eric, and the girls came through the gate. I waved at them as I headed through the fence to the house. The dog smelled the food in the bag as I came up on the porch and sat up, ears erect, and expectant looks on their faces. But this wasn't for them. Inside, everyone was dressed and ready to go. I passed out breakfast as we headed outside to the truck.
"Oh, wow, this is so good," Leanne said as she pushed crumbs into her mouth.
"Look at the size of this thing," Little Bit shouted, looking at hers. Taking a big bite of mine, I said,
"Big and good. Good and big."
We rolled past the bunker, and for the first time in a long time, no one was there. Not that there were no threats now, but they were considerably less than they were yesterday. We'd get back to security, but for now, everyone needed a break, some downtime. Passing Altoona, I noticed the market was busy. I'm sure some of those people had an idea what happened yesterday. We certainly made enough noise. But they were carrying on as though it were a normal day. And I guess it was. After all, that was the whole point of doing what we did. We took out the DHS so everyone could live a normal life and not have to worry about being sniped or blown to hell at the market. So it was a normal day, and I was glad to have it. Because here we were, riding down the road together as a family, like any family, headed to town. While it wasn't the old normal, maybe this could be the new normal, and that would be good enough for me. When we passed the power plant, I noticed a couple of Hummers there. The engineers were back to work. Maybe tomorrow I would come up and offer a hand. It would be incredible if we could get the plant running again. But as with all things today, that would only be the start of the work. There would be days of work to get the power out to anyone. I drove straight to the police department. I wanted to meet with Shane and see if he could help me set something up. Pulling up, I told Mel I needed to go inside. She said that she and the girls would go to the market on the lake. When she told me that, I looked back at Taylor in the mirror. Her last trip to the market wasn't good. I expected to hear her protest or for there to be some kind of trauma on her face, but she was smiling and looked eager. Smiling, I looked at Mel.
"You guys have fun. You have your pistol, right?"
Mel patted her side. "Yep. And the girls have their guns, too." Both Leanne and Taylor lifted their H&Ks up and nodded. Little Bit was the only one unarmed and made sure she let everyone know about it. She wasn't too happy about the fact, either. Turning in my seat, I said,
"Kiddo, you're not old enough yet, but soon, and don't rush it. It'll come fast enough on its own, trust me."
She opened the door and jumped out.
"Come on, let's go look."
Mel leaned over and kissed me.
"When you're done, come find us over there."
"Will do." I found Shane in the PD. He was standing in front of a large whiteboard with Cecil. The two were talking about the planted fields and manpower. When I came into the room, the two looked at me with smiles, but they quickly faded.
"Damn, Morgan, what the hell happened to you?" Cecil asked.
I shrugged.
"Shit happens."
Shane hopped up on a table, letting his feet dangle.
"I hear it went pretty good. You guys wiped them out."
I nodded.
"We did. They're gone. All of them."
Cecil crossed his arms.
"Almost all of them. They brought some back with them."
"Where'd they put those women and children?" I asked.
"We've got them in the old town hall. Sean is over there now," Shane said.
Leaning against the wall, I asked,
"What's the plan for them?"
Shane leaned back on his hands.
"Sheffield met with them last night and told them they were all free to leave."
"How'd that go?" I asked.
Cecil snorted. "Just as you'd imagine. Where the hell are they going to go? That's what they asked. And in reality, they're right. Where the hell are they supposed to go?"
I nodded.
"That is the problem. But what are we supposed to do with them? Shoot them? There's some things that simply cannot be."
Cecil rubbed the gray whiskers on his chin. And now we have people in our midst that resent us and will wish us all dead. Letting out a long sigh, I replied, Well, in a perfect world, there would be perfect solutions. Shane jumped off the table. This ain't no perfect world. Exactly, I replied. So what brings you to town? Cecil asked. Looking at Shane, I said, I came looking for you. I need your help with something. Anything, you name it. We've all been through a lot lately. I want to do something to cheer folks up. What are you thinking? Cecil asked. Well, you remember the old First Friday events we used to have downtown? He nodded. I was thinking of something like that, maybe in the park on the lake. I thought it would be fun to string some lights up and see if we could get a band or some folks with instruments into the band shell. Play some music, dance, just let it all go for a while. Cecil pointed at me. That's a hell of an idea. I think folks could really use something like that. Just a good old time. Shane rubbed his hands. Yeah. Sean is part of a bluegrass band. All those guys are still here in town. I'm sure they'd love to get together for some picking. Only thing we'd be missing was some food, Cecil said. I'll see what I can do about that, I replied. I know where there's some lights. I know what you're talking about, those strings of lights the city would drape through the trees. We can use the generator to power them, and the amps and stuff for the band, Shane said. How long do you think it would take to set up? I asked. Shane shrugged. Couple of days, I guess. Today's Wednesday. Let's plan on having our party on Saturday, I said. Cecil smiled. That would be perfect. Looking at Shane, I said, You get the lights up and talk to Sean and see if they'll play. I'll see what I can do about food. Cecil was smiling from ear to ear. This'll be a hoot. Shane looked excited as well. Yeah, I think this will be great. Let's see if we can get this put together. I think the community could really use it. I'll see you guys later. With a wave, I left the guys and walked towards the armory. I found Sheffield in his office in front of a stack of handwritten paperwork. I guess some people just couldn't let the old ways go. He looked up as I walked in and shook his head. Damn. You look worse today than you did yesterday. Your hair looks like shit, too, I replied, with a laugh. Sheffield leaned back in his chair. What can I do for you? Without being offered, I sat down. I'm planning a little party at the park. We're going to string some lights and bring in a bluegrass band to play. I think the town could use a night of fun. Sheffield's eyebrows went up. That's a good idea. I think everyone could use something like that. Sounds like you've got things pretty well planned out. I held up a finger. Almost. Cocking his head to the side, he asked, What? Food. His eyes narrowed. What about it? We should have something to offer. It doesn't have to be much, but something. Sheffield looked up at the ceiling. The wheels were turning. We have a lot of flour. We could make bread. That got my wheels turning. Get me a couple of sacks of that flour. I've got an idea. I'll bring the food. He looked at me quizzically. What are you going to bring? It's a secret. Without another word, I left his office. As I walked back towards the park, I thought about what it would take to pull off what I was thinking. But if I could, it would be epic. And make for one hell of a party. Hearing a diesel engine, I looked up to see Mike behind the wheel of an MRAP. I stopped and he hopped out. The rear door opened and Sarge, Doc, Thad, and Danny got out. They walked out towards one of the small garden plots planted in town. The chain gang was there, working, and they stopped and looked up. The two guardsmen watching them prodded them back to work, which they reluctantly did while keeping their eyes on the approaching group. I walked over to where they were. What's going on? I asked. Sarge rocked on his heels. It's time to finish this thing. Confused, I asked,
What?
The DHS. It's time to finish it, Sarge said.
Mike and Thad walked past us as I said,
We did yesterday. It's already finished.
Hearing a shot behind me, I jumped and spun around. Thad was standing over a body. He looked back at me and said,
Now it's done.
The other two men on the chain gang cowered in terror, thinking they would be next. I walked over and looked down at the man partially responsible for my daughter's injuries and the deaths of others.
Leanne killed the other one.
It brought back memories of beating the man.
Thad was right.
It was done now. I knew it would ultimately come to this. Some people just need killing.